Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Our next guest is a lexicographer. You know what one of a lexicographer is? She has a new dictionary out. It's aimed at children, and I'm finding it thoroughly enjoyable myself, and I think it works well for adults, as a matter of fact. And the guest is Jane Solomon, with us by phone today. She spends her days writing definitions and working on projects for dictionary.com, and her new book is called The Dictionary of Difficult Words. What are some of your favorite difficult words? Do you like using unusual words, or did you like using unusual words as a youngster? Join in the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Jane Solomon, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, first, tell us what a lexicographer does and how you became one.
A lexicographer is someone who writes and compiles and edits dictionaries. And I became a lexicographer I studied English and linguistics as an undergraduate at college. And my last semester at college, there was a guest lecturer, Erin McKean, who was a lexicographer teaching a class. And she made me realize that lexicography actually existed as a career. And I got some of my first freelance jobs from her recommending me. So that's how I got into the industry. Mm-hmm.
And so what inspired you to write this book?
Well, it's not so much inspiration as I got an amazing email from Rachel Williams, who was the publisher at Quarto Books at the time. She was working on an imprint called Wide-Eyed Editions, and she had this title for a book that she wanted to write, or she wanted someone to write. She wanted to commission to be written, called The Dictionary of Difficult Words, and she needed a lexicographer to write it. So she wrote to me, and I was very familiar with the work of Quarto Kids already, which is the publisher and the imprint, because I have a friend who had published a few children's books. She's a writer and illustrator. Her name's Lily Stewart. Lizzie Stewart. She's very talented with them. So I said yes right away. And by the end of the week, we had a call and we were talking about words and what level of difficulty should be in the Dictionary of Difficult Words. So that's how it happened.
So how does the approach for putting something like this together for children differ from writing for adults?
Well, when I was writing this book, the biggest thing for me was that I knew that this was going to be a dictionary that was going to be read aloud. And that's not a consideration I have at all when I'm writing definitions for dictionary.com. I don't expect people to read those definitions aloud. So it was really important to me as I wrote the definitions in the Dictionary of Difficult Words that all of them, part of my writing process was reading everything aloud. And as I read them aloud, I imagined that a 7-year-old version of myself was listening to me. And and I know that when I was 7, I would get really upset if people talked to me like I was a baby. I would get really angry if people talked down to me or said anything that I felt was condescending. So every bit of the definitions in this dictionary, I tried to treat the children who would be reading it with respect. I understand their intelligence. And yes, the definitions are written with more simple words than other dictionaries might have, but the headwords are very hard, and there are many headwords in there that a lot of adults would not know.
Oh, yes. I was humbled a little bit there, Jane, when I started going through it. I thought, well, I'm going to know all these words, and I was quickly disabused of that, for sure. And that made it all the more interesting for me.
Of course. I figured that kids would not be reading this book alone necessarily, and that I wanted to keep the adults entertained as well. So there's actually three levels of words in this dictionary. One of them are really, really hard words that most adults would not know unless maybe you're a lexicographer. And you would probably only encounter in a very old book, or maybe in a list of words we should bring back, that are archaic or something like that. Then the second level of words was words that adults would probably be familiar with and know the meaning of, but have difficulty explaining that to a child. And then the third set of words was words that adults would definitely know, really bright children would know, and would make them feel good about themselves, because after all, they are difficult.
Yeah, that's a great approach. Nick in Green Bay has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Larry. A little disappointed you didn't know the words, Larry, but that's okay. We get problems at my house because my kids are growing up here in Green Bay, and my wife is from the UP, so we have a lot of struggles because she uses words that aren't exactly what we'd be using. Like, she asked my daughter where the water fountain was, and my daughter looked there and said, "What are you talking about?" So it's weird how the dialect from the UP to Wisconsin is so much, such a mass difference. And I can't think of any other words she uses, but my kids are always giving her a hard time because she uses words that us normal people don't use.
Okay. Well, Jane, a comment on that?
Well, you think that you normal people don't use them. I mean, I look at the different varieties of English and I just get excited. I think that it's so wonderful that you have a household where there are people with different words for different things. That you definitely have. And what was the word for water fountain that you use?
Oh, we use bubbler.
Bubbler. Yeah. Yeah, that's very common in your area. And that's something that a lot of people might never encounter. And so to me, it's exciting that there's that variety of English. And it's not something to ridicule your wife over.
Oh, boy. Nick, thanks for calling. Let's go to Theodora in Madison. Hi.
Hello. I wanted to know, what is your definition or explanation for expialidocious?
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? All right.
Well, that word is not actually in the book, but I think it's defined in the song lyrics. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't remember the song lyrics off the top of my head.
I am trying to think of it too. I would say
that the closest word in the book to supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is frabjous. And that is a word that was coined by Lewis Carroll. And I can read you that definition in the book. It's something that is frabjous, is wonderful, joyous, and amazing. This is a great word to use as well. Frabjous. It's a little bit hard to say at first, but then once you learn it, it's really fun to say, and it's much easier to spell than supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
That's for sure. Well, what makes a word a real word?
So there's a section in this book about that, actually.
Yes, I know.
So a word doesn't become a word when it becomes entered in a dictionary. That's something that a lot of people believe. Maybe you're having an argument and you look up a word, what you think is a word in a dictionary, and you don't see it there. And then that means that it's not a word. That actually is not how lexicographers think. Words are real as soon as we start using them. And as soon as, you know, there's at least a few people who have a collective understanding of what the meaning of that is. Just because a word isn't in a dictionary doesn't mean it's not a word. And so, you know, part of this book is, here are some words that exist that maybe you didn't know about. And especially a message to children is, you can make up words and start using them, and that's okay. Lots of famous authors have done this. It's, you know, it's artistic license. It's a form of expression. You don't need a dictionary to tell you what's real or not.
I remember interviewing an author and talking with an author who had made up some words and took great delight when he saw those words appearing in other authors' books.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, look at Lewis Carroll and Frabjous. That was a word that at one point was made up. And here we are in this, it's in many dictionaries. It's in this dictionary. And it's such a delightful word that I'm so glad that he did that.
Yeah. Jane Solomon, our guest today, a lexicographer. She's based in Oakland, California, spends her days writing definitions and working on various projects for dictionary.com. And her book, it's a delightful book. It's called The Dictionary of Difficult Words. So it is a dictionary and it's aimed at youngsters. But I tell you what, you're going to have some fun looking through it as well. We're going to take a look at the news and weather. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we're going to be looking at some of the other words like triskaidekaphobia or dipnosophist. some of the other words that are really a lot of fun. And then we'll also, you're going to learn about maybe how you can figure out words. There's some hints on how to figure out a word, what it means. And I know that Jane's going to be sharing some of those as well. We'll be back with Jane right after this look at the news. So you stay with us. We'll be back soon here. I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. We're having some fun with words and word definitions today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and my guest today having a great time talking with Jane Solomon, a lexicographer, spends her days writing definitions and working on various projects for dictionary.com. And her new book is called The Dictionary of Difficult Words. It's for kids, but it's fun for adults as well. So maybe you have a child who likes to use difficult words. What are your some favorites? Do you have questions about being a lexicographer? Welcome your calls. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And as a matter of fact, we have Jeannie from Milwaukee online, so let's go there. Jeannie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm enjoying your show a lot. I love words, and in fact, I'm a poet. And I wanted to add to the conversation that the great poet Horace, in his treatise on poetry to young poets, said that the job of the poet is to add new words to the language.
Ah,
isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful. Comment, Jane?
Yeah, that's great. And that's in the spirit of lexicography. A word that didn't make it into the book because there were so many amazing words that start with P already in the book that I really love is the word poetaster. Are you familiar with it?
Oh, yes. Yes. it comes up at poetry readings and stuff. Yeah.
And what does it mean?
For anyone who is not familiar with the word poetaster, it's someone who is a bad poet. And it's such a funny word. I love it so much, but it did not make it in the book because there's a bunch of P is a letter that is rich with delightful words. And that's just one of them.
Thank you, Jeannie. Appreciate your call very much. Well, you talk about early in the book, right away in the beginning, you talk about how to read the book, which is really funny. And then you talk about how to work out what a word means. And you can talk about that a little bit.
So the section in the book that explains how to read this book, the idea behind that is that a lot of the younger people, the children who are getting this dictionary, maybe have never experienced using a printed dictionary before in their lives. So it's it's giving them permission to have fun with the book. Reading a dictionary is not a linear thing. You can read it in any order you want. You can just look up one word and leave, or you could, you know, read an entire letter's worth of words. You can use the dictionary to quiz other people on definitions or spellings or pronunciations. So it really is explaining that you can use this book however you want. It's a dictionary is a word resource. It's a reference book. And that means that you read it in a different way than you would read something that it has a narrative arc.
And then when you're figuring out words, you have a few tips, which are good tips.
Oh, sure. So there's a few tips in the book, and, you know, I'm sure anyone who reads through the entire book will be able to make up their own tips as well. But there's a lot of words in the book that have like the suffix ology or ologist. Those are really fun words. I know there's like ichthyologist and cryptozoology in this book, and a bunch of other words too. So it's saying, okay, if you come across a word with ology or ologist in it, it's probably going to be about someone who studies this thing, or the study of something. I talk about the word file, the suffix file, which if you see that in a word, the word's going to be about love. If the word phobia is in a word, it's probably going to be about fear or hate. So there's a bunch of tips on like recognizing roots of words that can be really exciting for a kid because they give you a key to understand a bunch of words only knowing a few roots. Another part of this the front matter of the book explains how to work out how to say a word. If you encounter a word in reading, oftentimes you won't know how to pronounce it and you might mispronounce it for years before realizing the right way to say it. And this book explains to children and to adults as well that that's perfectly okay. We all go through that. So the book also contains a pronunciation guide to help you understand how to say the word and not just what the word means.
And, you know, what I really enjoy, too, is the illustrator's work. Louise Lockhart illustrated the book, and it's a delightful illustration.
Yeah, Louise Lockhart is incredibly talented. I didn't know what to expect when I was working on the book. I was working in, you know, a blank Word document and I was writing it and I thought, this is interesting. We'll see how it looks as a book. And then once I got the layouts back with the illustrations, it really brought it alive. I know when I was talking to the publisher and the editor about illustrations, I said, I am hoping that this book goes in the direction of extremely bright colors, because I think a lot of times people think of a dictionary as like a dusty book on a shelf.
Yes.
And we want this to feel alive and exciting and vibrant. So the colors in the book are jump out at you and really bring all the words alive. Louise has such a great sense of humor, and you can see that in her illustrations. I would write definitions and have no idea what I would get back. There are so many like animals, like cat. There are a bunch of cats in the book that have a lot of personality. All the little details have been really special as part of the process.
Yeah, it's delightful. Conrad in Ashland will give you a chance. Hi, Conrad.
Hi. Yeah, I just had a question. This is more about a phrase than a single word.
Mm-hmm.
My father was born and raised in New Orleans, and when him and his brother would be out playing in the yard, usually barefoot, if one of them stepped on a dog poop, they would say, "Oh, you cut your foot." And I have never heard of that. I don't know.
Cut your foot. I have no idea. Jane, any thoughts on that?
I have never heard of that, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. That's really interesting. I'm going to look it up after the show.
I had a...
So there's a great regional dictionary of American English called the Dictionary of American Regional English, DARE, and they have an online resource as well. So that's where I'm going to look it up. That's the first place I'm going to go, and that... because they sent out people in... And they sent out all these researchers to interview people about the language they use, and then they recorded it in that dictionary. So it's a great resource if you want to learn about regionalisms.
And that originated right here in Wisconsin, as a matter of fact, DARE, Dictionary of American Regional English.
Yes, yes, it did.
Conrad, thanks. Tony in Fenimore, your turn. Hi, Tony.
My mom was always big in to reading, so she taught us at a young age to always ask questions about different big words, basically. And so from a young age, we always had a large vocabulary spoken-wise. And so one day I was talking to a friend of mine, and I used the word vernacular. And he swore up and down that that was not a word. And I had to prove to him that the word vernacular actually existed. And it was just kind of funny because he was just swore up and down that it wasn't. And it was funny because he just was so adamant that it wasn't. And I had to prove to him.
Oh, well good for you, Tony.
That sounds like you had a very big vocabulary growing up. This points to a role of that dictionaries play in people's lives, which is, oftentimes dictionaries will act as the source that will settle an argument of whether something exists or not. I'm glad vernacular was in the dictionary you looked in and that you could prove it to your friend. But again, sometimes words that are real are not in dictionaries. So you have to, dictionaries can't always solve those arguments.
Thanks, Tony. Roger in Grantsburg, we'll go to you.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call. What have you got for us?
Well, back when I'm not saying how old I am. I'm not real old, 57. But when I was in middle school, we had one teacher that, she used the dictionary as punishment. Oh. And if you acted up in class and were being a knucklehead, she'd taken, when she had her fill and it was done, she'd take and open up the dictionary and find a page. And say, okay, you grab the chalk and you stand here at the blackboard and you write everything on the blackboard from that page out of the dictionary, including all of the highlights, accents, everything. Well, then she said, it's not correct. Well, then I was kind of a smart aleck and I even wrote the page number. Then she got really mad.
Did you learn anything from it, Roger?
Yes, I did. Don't be a smart aleck. Then you get stuck behind the piano.
Well, Jane, I don't know if that's a good if that's a good approach or not.
That sounds like a really creative punishment. I think that it sounds like you did it more than once.
Yeah.
I have maybe a. Maybe a couple dozen cracks at her there.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe you liked copying out dictionaries. Is that what we're learning here?
We lost Tony there. Thank you, Tony, for calling. Maybe he got to like it for a bit. Roger and Dennis in Milwaukee. It's your turn. Hi, Dennis.
I just had a comment on the word drinking fountain. I'm a former Youper also. And when I came to Milwaukee is when I asked for a drinking fountain and nobody knew what I was talking about. And then I found out they're called bubblers. And it's my understanding that the term came from the drinking fountains that were placed on the street corners on Wisconsin Avenue. And they were always, the water that came out of them, it bubbled as it came out of them. What I was told is the reason they're called bubblers, and that word just stuck with everyone.
Yeah, it came right out of the middle of the unit of the fountain.
Yes.
And I think it was the Kohler Company, which is a big company here in Madison, in Wisconsin, manufactured those bubblers.
Yep, and they were on most street corners on Wisconsin Avenue, which was the main street.
Yeah, and well, you'd find them in Madison too. I can remember them. A long, long time ago when I was a kid, there were some bubblers. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate the call. And Dave, and let's give you a chance to join in here too. Well, wait a minute. Before that, what's your favorite word, by the way, Jane, in the book?
So in the back of the book, actually, Louise and I explain what our favorite words are. I think as a lexicographer, my favorite word is always changing. But at the time of writing this book, I said that deipnosophist is. My definition for that is a deipnosophist is someone who is very good at having interesting conversations with others while sitting down for a meal. And I love this word because it reminds me of my grandma. Her name's Minnie Solomon. She is 105 and she is very, very good at conversation. And whenever we sit down for a meal, she always knows how to keep the conversation going. She could talk to anyone. So I see that word and I think of her.
And did you use that word with her? Have you?
I told her about the word and she has the book. so I haven't thrown it into conversation naturally yet, but I'm sure I'll have an opportunity to soon.
There was another one that I liked, triskaidekaphobia.
Oh yeah, that's a great word. That, you know, it has phobia in it. That is a fear of the number 13. I love words that have really, really specific definitions, and you'll see a lot of those in this book.
Well, the book is absolutely fascinating, Jane, and I had so much fun with it. I've got a 15-year-old, so I'm still going to take it home with her, and we're going to look through the book and have some fun with it. And I want to.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh yeah, thank you for having me.
The author who we've just been talking with is Jane Solomon. And her book, and I hope you get a chance to take a look at it. It's a wonderful book. It's called The Dictionary of Difficult Words. Well, we're lucky to live in a state with so much going on, so much so we're starting a new monthly segment where we'll feature some great places and events to explore throughout Wisconsin. Here's something from a small town with a big and unique tradition. So let's listen in as we hear from Jill Nadeau.
There will be a lot of celebrations going on over the Independence Day weekend, and among them, small town parades. Many have a unique aspect or two. One such parade is in Pittsville. We actually have one of this year's Grand Marshals on the phone with us. Marv Kolbeck, thanks for joining me.
Oh, I'm happy to be with you.
So for those who are not familiar with your fine town, where is Pittsville?
Pittsville is known as the exact geographical center of the state.
Is it?
We're about 110 miles north of Madison.
Okay, so that not too far for anybody in the state to come visit you. How big is Pittsville?
884.
Oh, so you're not a huge town. How long have you lived there, Marv?
I've lived here since 1964.
Okay. Well, how long has this 4th of July parade been around?
I was checking back, and this is going to be our 58th annual American Legion and Lions co-sponsoring the 4th of July celebration.
Wow, that's a long time.
Got a lot of good memories of a lot of good happenings that we've had in previous events.
I'll bet. Now, you and your wife are the Grand Marshals. What's your wife's name?
Sherry.
Sherry, okay. So you and Sherry are the Marshals for this year's parade. How did you get that honor?
I missed a meeting one night. of course, I've been a Lions member for 62 years and a Legion member for 41 years, so I guess that had something to do with it.
And I'm sure you've contributed to that community quite a bit over those years, too.
I've tried to, yes.
Now, you have a very unusual element in your parade, and it has to do with having horses. Tell us about that.
Well, I checked with Glenna Bushman, our local, at that time, home ec teacher at the high school, came up with the idea 27 years ago. Our local library has the honor of having volunteers selling road apple tickets before and during the parade. And the object behind it is, as the horses pass through on the parade, if they should make a deposit on your ticket, that ticket holder wins a cash prize of around $25. And last year we had 30 horses in our parade, and we had a number of winners of $25, which would be direct hits. And if it was a near hit, they paid $10 or $15. But it gets a good following.
Oh, I'll bet. So how much are the tickets?
$1 a piece.
Oh, deal. So people are buying like 20 at a time, I would imagine.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Now, let's give us a little bit of information about where and when the parade's going to start.
Actually, our 4th of July celebration involves a 2- and 5-mile walk or race. And as of last year, I think we've been getting about 900 people come on the 3rd of July to participate in the 2- or 5-mile run or walk. And then, of course, when everything is all over, the race ends up in the Riverside Park, which is our city park. And there we have a carnival set up, food and refreshment stands, a bingo is being played, and live music is played during the evening. So then on the 4th of July, we have a kiddie parade that starts at 11 o'clock, and they finish up before noon when our parade really begins. The parade lasts for about an hour, and, of course, that includes the road apple race.
Sure.
So then that afternoon, of course, the carnival again, bingo, food and refreshments, and live music all afternoon. And then in the evening, of course, we have fireworks, and it's quite a spectacular showing for people that gather here for that particular event.
Well, Marv, it sounds like a fun-filled family kind of couple of days.
Yes.
Well, have a wonderful time, and congratulations on being the Grand Marshal with your wife.
Well, thank you for the opportunity of talking on this program.
You bet. Thanks so much, Marv.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye. For more information on this event and some others around the state in July, go to our website, wpr.org/timeout.
Do you have an event that you'd like to suggest for our Time Out Wisconsin segment? We'd love to hear from you. You can send us an email at timeoutwisconsin@wpr.org. timeoutwisconsin@wpr.org. We'll have more for you next month. Until then, I hope you enjoy taking time to get out and explore Wisconsin. And just to look ahead a little bit to what's going on tomorrow on the show. Of course, tomorrow's Friday, so that means Garden Talk. Mark Dwyer from the Janesville Rotary Garden will be back with us to talk about ornamental edibles and plants for hummingbirds. That's tomorrow on Garden Talk. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.